Yeah, Emily and Amy asked me to read a sex scene as a kind of counter to the sickening sentimentality of the next song. So I'm going to read a bit from Fingersmith. My mum read Fingersmith and she liked it a lot, but she was upset because it had what she called the C word in it. I didn't know what she meant. I thought she meant something like sailors or shanties or something like that. But, and then I couldn't even remember using it, but when I was looking for something for the show, I remembered where I'd used it. But anyway, so brace yourselves. This is from quite far into the book, and this book is set in the 1860s. Let's hear it from the 1860s. I can't begin to kind of summarise what's happened so far, but basically Maud, who's a mistress, has a lady's maid called Sue who shares her bed and is about to be married. And Maud's a bit kind of fraught. And unbeknown to Sue, Maud has been made to read quite a lot of pornography in her youth. She's still quite young, anyway. I've begun in sleeping to dream unspeakable dreams and to wake each time in a confusion of longing and fear. Sometimes Sue stirs, sometimes she does not. Go back to sleep, she will say, if she does. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I rise and go about the room, sometimes take drops. I take drops this night, then return to her side, but sink not into lethargy, but only into more confusion. I think of the books I've lately read, to Richard and to my uncle. They come back to me now in phrases, fragments, pressed her lips and tongue, takes hold of my hand, hip, lip and tongue, forced it half strivingly, took hold of my breasts, opened wide the lips of my little, the lips of her little cunt. Silence them. I can almost see them rising darkly from their own pale pages to gather, to swarm and combine. I put my hands before my face. I don't know how long I lie for then, but I must make some sound or movement, for when I draw my hands away, Sue is awake and watching. I know that she is watching, though the bed is so dark. Go to sleep, she says. Her voice is thick. I feel my legs very bare inside my gown. I feel the point at which they join. I feel the words still swarming. The warmth of her limbs comes inching, inching through the fibres of the bed. I say, I'm afraid. Then her breathing changes. Her voice grows clearer, kinder. She yawns. What is it, she said. She says, she rubs her eye. She pushes the hair back from her brow. If she were any girl but Sue, if she were Agnes, if she were a girl in a book, girls love easily there. That is their point. Hip, lip, and tongue. Do you think me good, I say. Good, miss. She does. It felt like safety once. Now it feels like a trap. I say, I wish you would tell me. Tell you what, miss? Tell me a way to save you, a way to save myself. The room is perfectly black. Hip, lip, girls love easily there. I wish, I say, I wish you would tell me what it is a wife must do on her wedding night. And at first, it is easy. After all, this is how it is done in my uncle's books. Two girls, one wise and one unknowing. He will want, she says, to kiss you. He will want to embrace you. It is easy. I say my part, and she, with a little prompting, says hers. The words sink back upon their pages. It is easy. It is easy. Then she rises above me and puts her mouth to mine. I have felt before the pressure of a gentleman's still dry lips against my gloved hand, my cheek. I've suffered Richard's wet, insinuating kisses upon my palm. Her lips are cool, smooth, damp. They fit themselves imperfectly to mine, but then grow warmer, damper. Her hair falls against my face. I cannot see her, I can only feel her and taste her. She tastes of sleep, slightly sour, too sour. I part my lips to breathe or to swallow, or perhaps to move away. But in breathing or swallowing or moving, I only seem to draw her into my mouth. Her lips part also. Her tongue comes between them and touches mine. And at that, I shudder or quiver, for it is like the finding out of something raw, the troubling of a wound, a nerve. She feels me jolt and draws away, but slowly, slowly and unwillingly, so that our damp mouths seem to cling together and, as they part, to tear. She holds herself above me. I feel the rapid beating of a heart and suppose it my own. But it is hers. Her breath comes past. She has begun very lightly to tremble. Then I catch the excitement of her, the amazement of her. "Do you feel it?" she says. Her voice sounds strangely in the absolute darkness. "Do you feel it?" I do. I feel it as a falling, a dropping, a trickling, like sand from a bulb of glass. Then I move, and I'm not dry like sand. I'm wet. I'm running, like water, like ink. I begin, like her, to shake. "Don't be frightened," she says. Her voice has a catch. I move again, but she moves too. She comes nearer to me, and my flesh gives a leap to hers. She's trembling worse than before. She's trembling from the closeness of me. She says, "Think more of Mr. Rivers." I think of Richard watching. She says again, "Don't be frightened." But it is she who seems frightened. Her voice still has its catch. She kisses me again. Then she raises her hand, and I feel the tips of her fingers flutter against my face. "Do you see?" she says. "It is easy. It is easy. Think more of him. He'll want to touch you. To touch me. Only touch you," she says. The fluttering hand moves lower. "Only touch you, like this." When she puts up my nightgown and reaches between my legs, we both grow still. When her hand moves again, her fingers no longer flutter. They've grown wet and slide, and in sliding seem like her lips as they rub upon mine to quicken and draw me, to gather me, out of the darkness, out of my natural shape. I thought I longed for her before. Now I begin to feel a longing so great, so sharp, I fear it will never be assuaged. I think it will mount and mount and make me mad or kill me. Yet her hand moves slowly still. She whispers, "How soft you are, how warm. I want..." The hand moves even slower. She begins to press. I catch my breath. That makes her hesitate, and then press harder. At last, she presses so hard I feel the giving of my flesh. I feel her inside me. I think I cry out. She does not hesitate now, however, but comes nearer to me and puts her hips about my thigh, then presses again. So slight she is. But her hip is sharp, her hand is blunt. She leans, she pushes, she moves her hips and hand as if to a rhythm, a time, a quickening beat. She reaches. She reaches so far, she catches the life, the shuddering heart of me. Soon I seem to be nowhere, but at the points at which my flesh is gripped by hers. And then, "Oh, there," she says, "just there, oh, there." I'm breaking, shattering, bursting out of her hand. She begins to weep. Her tears come upon my face. She puts her mouth to them. "You pearl," she says, as she does it. Her voice is broken. "You pearl."